Yes, the past few months have been calamitous for Afghanistan. Since the withdrawal of Western troops began, the Taliban offensive has accelerated dramatically. Violence has escalated to record levels. Negotiations have faltered. Having already taken control of much of the countryside, the Taliban now has several major provincial capitals under siege. It's a crucial moment for the future of the country, but can anything be done to stabilise the situation long enough to get peace talks back on track? David Kilcullen is a former soldier and diplomat who served as a counterinsurgency advisor during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he joins us now from Colorado. Welcome back to the program, David.
Hi, Geraldine.
Could you tell us a little more in detail what you say is happening on the ground in Afghanistan? There are really developments right up until the morning. And what you think the Taliban strategy is?
Yeah, so what we've seen since really the beginning of May is just a cascading loss of control by the government in the countryside, which is now resulting in real pressure on Afghanistan's cities. So Afghanistan has 34 provinces. 17 of the provincial capitals out of 34 are now under siege. The Taliban just captured this morning the capital city of Nimruz province in the far southwest. They have cut Herat city off from its airport, which means it's now basically besieged. They're fighting in the cities of Kandahar and Sherbagan, which is in the north, and essentially are attacking into the main population centres of Afghanistan, having gained control of the ring road that connects all those cities. And it is really an extremely dire situation. I mean, I think people know I wrote about this last week in the Oz, but even since then, it's gotten significantly worse in just the last week.
Yes, and that awful assassination of the media head, who is very close to the president, a civilian, targeted, obviously. I mean, that's just an example, isn't it?
Just one. He was gunned down in the street in downtown Kabul. A few days before that, there was a Taliban assault on the house of the defense minister, who was luckily not there when it went down.
But eight people died there, didn't they?
They did, and, you know, rockets coming into cities all the time, and just a real sense of panic amongst friends that I talked to on the ground in Afghanistan.
And the Taliban, you suggest, is preemptively trying to avoid the formation of another Northern Alliance. Tell us about that, please.
So last time around in the 1990s, some of us are old enough to remember what happened then. The Taliban began their offensive from the southeast and essentially pushed north and tried to push west. And what they did was create almost like a safe haven in the northern third of the country, where Tajiks, Uzbeks, other ethnic groups that were opposed to the Taliban, who are mostly Pashtun, were able to create a safe haven and eventually consolidate into the Northern Alliance. So the Taliban were never able to fully take control of the country. They're not stupid. They know that if it comes to a similar campaign this time, that could happen again. So what they've been doing over the past several years is really building a strong position in the north, and they've now been pretty effective in taking over cities and districts all across the north, which means that as the government finds itself getting pushed back from the Taliban, it doesn't really have a firm base to fall back on. And that means that the chance of a sort of repeat of the 1990s, where the government's managed, or the non-Taliban groups managed to stabilize, I think is actually a lot less likely than it was. Certainly that's the Taliban's intention of preventing that.
So are they being cleverer in their strategy than they have been in the past, are they?
The Taliban we're dealing with today, I would argue, are orders of magnitude better than the Taliban of 2001. They are much better fighters. They govern much more effectively. They've got a shedload more money. And now they're even running, you know, international negotiations. I mean, the Taliban delegation went to Tianjin in China last week to negotiate with the Chinese government. They're talking to the Iranians. You know, they are acting like they think they've already won. In many ways.
Where's the shed load of money coming from?
Well, a number of sources. Ironically, one of the biggest sources of money during the large-scale Western occupation of Afghanistan was actually us, because a lot of the aid money and assistance given to the government found its way to the Taliban. That's happening now as well. So when districts and towns are captured by the Taliban, they often acquire a lot of weapon systems and money and assets from the government as they're doing that. And they also still are very effective at skimming money from businesses across the country. And then the other new development since May is that the Taliban have captured a number of crossing points into and out of the country. Nimruz is just the latest. That's one of the major crossing points into Iran. And they're now collecting customs and excise money from traffic going in through these crossing points.
What about the Afghan Air Force? You say that's a very important part of this whole equation.
Yeah, so Afghanistan, really, if you want to defend against the kinds of things that the Taliban are doing, you need the ability to move by air, because what they're doing is surrounding cities from the outside and taking control of the road system. And so having the ability to fly people around to respond to that, or indeed to run airstrikes, you know, to prevent the Taliban from successfully taking cities, that becomes really critical. And we've seen this acceleration of Taliban activity happen when the US pulled out from Bagram Air Force Base and stopped providing significant air support to the Afghan government. Only about two-thirds of the Afghan government's, the Afghan Air Force's aircraft can actually fly. About 30% of them are unable to be flown. And that's partly because the contractors who provided maintenance support were forced to pull out when we left, and so there's no maintenance support happening and aircraft are ceasing to operate. And then in addition, the Afghans have always been very short of precision-guided missiles and bombs, and they've actually run out of rockets for their aircraft. They just don't have any left. So essentially they're flying the Air Force into the ground to try to maintain some kind of defensive posture, but they're just not able to do it.
What would
there's a certain amount of... Oh, sorry.
Well, I'm just looking at the time. I want to ask you, what would it take to stabilise the situation, if it can be done, from a purely military perspective?
From a purely military perspective, there's a number of things we could do, but I think the main one is to restore a degree of air support to the Afghans, and that could be B-52s operating out of different places in the region. It could be F-15s that are currently operating out of the UAE. But what we really need is to put some kind of asset back into Afghanistan. I mean, the aircraft that are flying to support the Afghan military in some cases are flying 16-hour round trips and only get to spend less than 40 minutes over Afghan airspace because they just have to fly all the way from the Middle East. And without that, I think it's going to be very hard for them to stabilize. The other big thing we need to do is help the Afghans to stop burning their best troops, which is their special operations forces, in trying to defend everywhere and help them to consolidate. I really think it really, at this point, boils down to air support.
Are they holding out anywhere?
Well, Kabul is still holding. Kandahar, at the moment, there's heavy fighting going on inside the city of Kandahar, but they've successfully held the centre of the city. They just recaptured a portion of Lashkargah, which is in Helmand. So there are places where they're pushing back. And frankly, like Herat, for example, districts in Herat have changed hands three or four times in the last 3 weeks. So the Afghans are still fighting very hard, but they're losing and being pushed back on the centre of the country.
In the meantime, if the allies are withdrawing, are we likely to see other countries, particularly China, thinking of that amazing meeting in Tianjin, might they move to fill a power vacuum that appears to be opening up in Kabul? And I suppose, would it necessarily be a bad thing? We've got to ask that, I suppose, if the country is in sort of massive turmoil.
Well, I think it's ironic that when he announced the withdrawal back in April, President Biden said we're pulling out of Afghanistan so that we can better compete with China. But in fact, what that did was open up a vacuum that the Chinese are very much able to fill. They, you know, they've now got a joint land border with the Taliban in the northeast of the country. The Taliban delegation last week was led by Mullah Bereda, who's one of the very senior, is almost like a foreign minister of the Taliban, and they're talking about future economic and diplomatic relations. And of course, the Chinese just did a deal with Iran and already have a very close relationship with Pakistan in terms of their Belt and Road initiative. So it would actually make a lot of sense for the Chinese to engage in some economic activity in Afghanistan, where they already own a significant chunk of the country's mineral resources. From the Taliban standpoint, that would mean that they wouldn't be a pariah nation. They'd have a relationship and possibly even investment from outside. Obviously, that's not a good outcome from Washington's standpoint, but from the standpoint of the Afghan people, you know, it's in some ways better than the alternative of going back to the chaotic and horrific situation that existed in the 1990s.
Pretty extraordinary, isn't it, for the Chinese to be talking to an outright Islamist organisation, given some of their attitudes within at the moment. And, of course, you know, yeah, Afghanistan sucked the life out of various big powers, and it might do the same to China.
It might. I mean, there's a certain hypocrisy in what they're doing in Xinjiang and then talking to the Taliban, but that's Beijing, you know. But, yeah, I think you could have a certain amount of schadenfreude and say, hey, you know, the Russians had it for a while, we've had it for a while, it's time for the Chinese to get done over by the Afghans. But I think, A, they're a little smarter than that. B, they're already a regional power, so that's a bit different. And C, like, it's not lost yet. And I think we've got to get out of this crouch that we're in where everyone's waiting for the inevitable victory of the Taliban. I know dozens, possibly hundreds of people that are going to get their heads cut off on television when the Taliban take these cities. And I think we really need to be conscious that this is going to be a defeat, and it's going to be a horrible outrage, frankly, from a humanitarian standpoint, if we don't turn it around.
Oh, and for the West sort of whole, particularly the US, in sense of their own status and their ability to do alliances for the long term. Look, we've got to go. David, we'll have you back. Thank you very much indeed. It's very disturbing to hear.
Thanks, Geraldine.
David Kilcullen.